Hello, sexy nerds in the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture slash sports nerd. Ali?
I am Ali, your classic nerd.
And I'm V, your cultural anthropologist, comic book guy, I guess. I don't know. Like, what would you guys define me as?
The comic book nerd.
Yeah. Am I?
Yeah. Comic book gamer nerd.
And you're our food guy. You're the guy I turn to, like, if I don't know what to get.
Yeah, but, you could be a foodie without, like, there's no such thing as a food nerd.
Is there?
Like, he's definitely book, but he talks about, he's also happens to be a foodie in the same way that I am a classic nerd, but I also happen to have other attributes, right?
Oh, the same way now, I'm a pop culture nerd and a deviant.
What?
And the pop.
Yeah, so you talk about pop culture things, but yeah, you also happen to be a deviant. Yeah, you're the comic book guy. Yeah.
Alton Brown is a food nerd, though. The Good Eats guy?
Yeah, okay, I could give him.
He's a food nerd. Or that Quantum Kitchen dude.
Yeah, that's weird. We had we were in this program at the university, the head TAs, right?
The university.
Shut up. And the STEMs, the people in the chemistries, what we do is every week, one group brings in food.
And it's good, sometimes a little potluck action.
Yeah, they have like a, themes and whatnot. And the STEM people who happen to be from chemistry and biology and all that.
Science, technology, they brought energy, in mathematics?
Yeah, they brought in like some type of liquid nitrogen ice cream. They did this whole...
Yeah, they have that here.
They did this...
That got popular now.
Yeah,
Sub-Zero.
But there's like a spiel to it. Like it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's the only time approved of chemistry. I'm like, what alchemy is this?
What did you bring? The hearts of your enemies?
I brought biscuits. Yes.
Yeah. That's an Aztec thing.
I brought,
as a historian, I would think you'd bring, these are the hearts of our enemies.
No, I brought biscuits.
Oh.
British biscuits.
Man. Well, it's like.
They were tea biscuits. They were really good.
It's the modern day British. It's like the imperial.
Chocolate dipped biscuits. There was a Belgian waffle biscuit. It was very good.
There was an almond
crisp biscuit.
I'm happy it was very good. Biscuits because it's like some people, when they think English, they want to go to scones, but I find scones to be too dry.
Scones are a bit dry.
But they call cookies biscuits there.
Yeah, they call everything biscuits.
Yeah, and every dessert is pudding.
Yeah, everything is called pudding.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, a scone is not a biscuit.
But a biscuit
scone
is not...
it's actually called a scone.
Yeah.
Scone.
And usually what it is eaten during high tea. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they have different butter creams or marmalades that they put onto the scones.
Along with mini tea sandwiches and biscuits and other stuff.
A cucumber sandwich?
Cucumber sandwiches.
The cucumber sandwiches or
there's
like
other
salmon
type of
and
sandwiches.
Dill.
There's the butter sandwich, cheese, which is quite popular.
Mm, I don't know. I had.
They're
I,
small with usually kind of thick
yeah,
bread.
Yeah, I could think. I could imagine it.
And you have it with tea.
I'm unsophisticated. So like my idea of a snack is like what I had for the Super Bowl Sunday at our party.
What was that?
We had buffalo wings, some honey mustard wings, some barbecue wings.
This is the thing with wings that I can't do. It's the mixing of all that.
Nah.
Like at one point your stomach is going to have honey mustard, barbecue, and buffalo. What was it? And buffalo all mixed in it. And I don't think that can't possibly be good for your
and
stomach.
And then I had some guacamole.
See, you eat nasty. And like when I eat, there's a theme. My stomach goes, I know what's coming next. No.
And then there was bologna.
See, that's so
with
gross.
With cacciolo.
That's gross.
That's just like a potato.
It's a pastry. It's an egg. It's kind of an egg roll pastry that is folded into
like squares, rectangles,
filled with either chives or onions or with potato.
Sometimes they put pumpkin in there
and it's dipped in yogurt.
Yeah, I had it with some yogurt.
Bologna.
Yeah.
Kind of.
No, but bologna.
But it's
bologna.
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 You fucking asshole.
You fucking piece of shit.
Like what you put between white bread. Right?
That's not what it is at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's delicious.
It's good. But the problem is
it's like a samosa almost.
How do you mix that with wings?
And then we had Nutella pizza for dessert.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, your stomach is probably, this is why you have so many stomach issues.
Yeah.
It's because you just put anything in.
That's
weird to me. Like, there's themes to what I eat, right?
Nah, fuck that, dude. Just whatever's delicious at the time.
I sound like
you're an elitist.
I'm not an elitist. Yeah, I care about my, I care
you
about.
Eat, he eats some themes.
Do you eat in themes, V?
No, I have. I do a lot.
Bro, but I've gotten like, eating with you.
I'll eat anything.
I don't. Yeah. No, because it'll hurt your stomach and then you feel all weird. Like if you eat Indian food, you're not going to follow that up with tacos. You know what I mean? Like I had Indian food for lunch, so we're going to have tacos for dinner. No, like that's weird to me.
Why? Actually, no, I would say because no, I do that because there's a several hours separating the meal.
No, that's just weird to me. Your stomach is still full. Look,
when we went to WonderCon like 2 years ago,
We
went to the packing district. We started off with what?
We did the croft. We did the poutine. Short rib poutine.
Yeah, and then you did a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
And then we went and had
the blind rabbit. We had the duck confit mac and cheese.
And then we had
the lamb medallions.
Yeah.
The fried chicken cracklings.
Yeah.
And we also had there was one other thing in there too. I don't remember.
I had a bunch of alcohol.
We went and had crepes afterwards.
Yeah, you fucking stuffed those things.
I'm feeling slightly queasy from all of this.
Look at it. That's
slightly nauseous.
A nice arrangement of food.
No, it's weird.
It's delicious.
It's me trying it. It's me wanting to try everything at once.
Okay, if you do it once and you're trying things, like you're doing a taste test, I get it.
Do you go to buffets?
But it's like, no, I don't go to buffets.
Bro, you used to love Sizzler as a kid.
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Yeah, I love Sizzler. My parents used to take me to
Sizzler. But here's the point is, the only reason I like Sizzler was that cheese bread.
Yeah. And the corn fritters.
The point is that now, as an adult, when you shove a bunch of things that don't make sense, first of all, you're confusing your taste buds.
Fuck that.
Second of all, you're shoving it all into your stomach into one big potted mess. It's like your poor stomach is going, what is this guy doing to me?
Fuck that. You shove good things in your mouth. And
no,
you
don't just mix it. This is like the buffets always trip me out, right? Like people are shoveling tacos and pasta and all of it into your and pizza all at once. And I'm like, no.
That's the most delicious thing in the world.
No, you just pick something and stick.
You pick all the good things and you put them in your stomach.
You have a appetizer that gets things started. Oh, then you have your main course and you finish off with something that cleanses the palate.
1%ers and
it has nothing to do with 1%. You know what? If I have pizza, I follow it up with like ice cream. There's no 1% in that. It's pizza, right? But it's like I don't confuse my body and my digestive system.
I think you're an elitist with your pizza too. Where do you order your pizza from?
I ordered my pizza recently. I've been really enjoying this little place. Oh, what's it called? It's in Laguna Niguel, in off of Golden Lantern. It's called Bella Roma, which is quite good.
I've had their chicken parm.
They're actually quite good.
Their baked ziti.
The reason I get it is because it reminds me of Italian Express and Amici's.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a nostalgic thing.
But see, that's an elitist pizza place.
It's not an elitist pizza place.
It is. You go to, this is a mom and pop pizza shop. They get their marinara straight from Sicily.
No, so you can't call it elitist if it's modeled after a place called Italian Express.
Yeah, and if it's a mom and pop shop, it's the exact opposite of an elitist.
It's not modeled after a place called Italian Express. It just reminds him of Italian Express.
See that, but that's just like, it's like it reminds me of Domino's. Like it doesn't mean that it's like authentic.
And
pizza.
a mom and pop shop being
how much is a large pie from Bella Roma?
I don't remember. $16.
Oh, you know how much a large pie is from Domino's? $9.99. You fucking elitist bastard.
That's the elitist about Bella Roma.
You spent 50% more on your pizza than I do.
Bella Roma. 60%. Bella Roma. True. A mom and pop shop.
70 technically.
By definition, can't be elitist.
Yes, it can.
In fact, if you try to make it elitist, it's an oxymoron. An elitist pizza would be that one pizza that's like going viral right now that's like $1,000.
That caviar one with the gold flakes.
Yeah, with the gold flakes and the caviar. You saw that, right?
Yeah. You wouldn't eat it because it has caviar.
I hate caviar and I hate gold flakes. Why would I put gold flakes in my...
You know damn well you eat them gold flakes, you elitist fucking...
No, I've had gold tonic before.
Fake English bastard.
I've had...
What the hell? I don't know.
I've had gold tonic before.
Gold tonic?
Like that you make a small tonic out of gold.
You would!
No, it was part of an experience thing. I was on a tour.
Oh, there how much did that tour cost you, motherfucker?
There was no, like, I don't take gold regularly, and I sure as hell don't want gold in my food.
You know how
gold
I know, is not you know how I know Ali's an elitist? He won't go to a taco truck for tacos.
No, not for tacos. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, would you go to a truck for something else?
Yeah, I'd go for a truck for something.
But like a high-end food truck. Their meals are like $50.
Like a food Maserati?
No, I'd go for euros. The problem with food truck tacos is they hurt my tummy.
They hurt my tummy. When you go out, do you eat street food?
No, not often. Very rarely. If I'm traveling.
Elitist.
If I'm traveling, like I have French fries in Europe with mayonnaise, that's street food.
That's disgusting.
Oh, that's great.
It's a different type of mayonnaise. Yeah.
Especially, you have that's a Dutch thing. Vlaamse frites, whatever it's called. Like, it's like the mayo there is different.
I don't like
but
that.
But yeah, they do
this Holland giant, in particular.
Yeah, they do this thing, and yeah, like the Dutch style. It's like they do it in like this paper cone. Yeah. It's like a street food. And they put it on top. And you make like a little.
But it's a different type of. I don't like this fucking cool. What is it? Miracle Whip.
No, not that type of.
Yeah. It's like I mean, it's all mayo, but like it's just a little bit different.
More horseradishy.
Not really, no, because mayo is just
a sweet, little like sweeter.
Egg whites and all that other stuff.
It's a little bit sweeter.
It's a little, yeah. It's just a little bit different.
Do you put pineapples on your pizza?
No.
Do you?
Yeah.
You seem like a pineapple.
If it's Hawaii, if it's with ham,
fucking
stuff,
abomination.
It is abomination.
I give a fuck what you think.
Pineapple does not belong on pizza. It's an abomination.
Pineapple does not belong on pizza.
It's an abomination.
I can concur with you there.
I would like for our listeners to tweet us at Currently Nerdy on Twitter and tell us if pineapple belongs on pizza.
It doesn't.
This is all on the internet right now. Everyone's debating about whether even there's the Salt Bay.
It's an abomination.
Throwing pineapple on pizza.
It's an abomination.
It isn't right.
Christ would not approve.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that people do with pizza that isn't right, in my opinion.
What, hot Cheetos? Did you put hot Cheetos on pizza?
No. Corn. That's a weird one.
I like corn on my pizza.
I don't like corn on
pizza. Persian pizza.
No.
They put like corn.
Like, wait, corn like is not a pizza thing.
Kebab.
No, they've never put kumi de kebab. They put beef. They put kumi, like little giant ass rolls of kebab on pizza. It doesn't work.
How do you know, bro?
Doesn't know. No kumi de on the pizza. But they do put ground beef. Persian pizza is all the vegetables and then ground beef.
Yeah, that's true.
And by all the vegetables, I mean all the vegetables. Onions, green peppers, mushrooms, black olives.
All that shit, yeah. Spinach.
And then
spinach also doesn't belong in a pizza.
Spinach is a little makes more sense. It's Italian.
Well, okay. I had a nice little. But if you had to put a pesto sauce on it, then
put like a pesto
yeah,
sauce.
Yeah, pesto sauce.
Are you talking about this because this is all the shit you ate while you were watching the Super Bowl,
dude? I like went into a food coma during the Super Bowl.
Because that's what Super Bowl, like watching the Super Bowl isn't just
watching
the barbaric sport that is football. It's also the experience of getting together with other meatheads. And
I was with my family.
And wearing jerseys and yelling at the screen and shoveling nasty ass food.
The only person.
Nasty, cheap ass food in your mouth.
Don't call my aunt's cooking cheap. It was good. The only.
Your aunt's cheap.
Your aunt too, you son of a bitch. The only person wearing a jersey at our Super Bowl party was my 7-year-old nephew. And he's allowed to. But he was a Patriots fan. Which bothered me because I kept telling him Tom Brady's a Trump supporter. And he's like, but I don't like Tom
Brady.
He's
also a cheater, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Isn't it? Someone was accusing him of
deflating footballs.
Did he also do like some type of wife abuse or something?
No.
Because I saw a meme where it says, I love these chokers. And it showed a bunch of girls with chokers. And then it showed Tom Brady.
No.
The fact that he chokes
They thought he was choking in the game.
Gotcha.
But he ended up winning.
Gotcha.
So you went completely sinister.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, is he a wife beater?
Then again, though, you know, there's not...
You weren't too far off.
It's football. I mean, they could have put anyone
it's
in
like
there.
A high
you
percentage,
could have assumed that,
So
bad as that sounds.
You should have been impressed that I knew who Tom Brady was.
Yeah. Well, you
saw the photo and it didn't say Tom Brady. I'm like, that's Tom Brady.
Like, I know the name Tom Brady, but if you showed me a picture of him, I wouldn't be able to identify.
I do. He looks white.
His nickname is Handsome Tom.
He's not that handsome.
He
just looks like a typical guy.
White women love him.
Do they?
Yeah, white women love Tom Brady.
I've never met
him. It's like a guy showed me a picture of who's the dude? Elbows? Tebow.
Tim Tebow.
Yeah, show me a picture of him. I had no idea who he was. But I know who Tim Tebow is because
you know the
Tim
name.
Tebow to him, and Tom Brady look similar.
Jesus plays football with him.
They do look similar, I'll give you that.
Yeah. It's because they're white. They don't look similar.
They look similar to me.
You're just being prejudiced.
Just being ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it's true. They do look similar.
You're being prejudiced.
Do they? I don't know.
If you're white, you're Ben Affleck.
Someone tell me if Tim Tebow and what's his name? The other guy.
Tom Brady.
Tell me if they actually
look similar. Can we just comment real quickly on like, these are the names that are my nightmare in classrooms.
Thomas Brady?
Tom Brady and Tim Tebow.
I've
told you my experience about
Kevin's
with white names.
You changed their names.
I changed this poor kid's name.
It was a Kevin. You have a thing against Kevin's.
I don't remember what it was, but I think I called him like Brian for the entire year. He turned in his final at the last day of class. He was a good kid.
His name was Thomas.
And he's like, my name was Michael. I'm like, God.
You know who he is? Have you ever watched Parks and Rec?
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times.
So you know,
I didn't like the first season very much.
Yeah, the first season's whack, and then it gets better. You know Jerry?
Yes.
So Jerry's real name is actually Gary Gergich.
Yeah, I know that. They call him Jerry.
They call him Jerry because like his supervisor called him Jerry the first day and he just never corrected him. Yeah. And then they start calling him Larry. That's you. Poor little Gary Gergich was sitting there just trying to be a good, upstanding government
employee. You know, if you want to piss someone off in a debate, you just keep changing the name.
Oh.
That's a phenomenal.
So called Donald Trump, Ronald Trump.
You just do that. As you're arguing them, you just keep using different names.
Well, that's
it pisses them off.
That's a TV trope too, where it's like the mother-in-law hates you, so she like never calls you by your actual name. Like they did that in I Love Lucy, where Lucy's mom always called Ricky Mickey.
Oh, that's funny.
Or, you know, I mean, you see it in a lot of shows.
But it's like, it's not just that you call them a different name. You call them every time you address them.
By something.
You change the name up.
Yeah. Well, they did it. Dr. Cox did that in...
pisses people off.
Well, yeah, Scrubs. Ron Swanson would do that to Ann Perkins.
Mm, just call people by different names.
Yeah, call her different.
You know what's a good name? Christopher Kingston. The loyal listener of ours. He actually sent me a message.
Chris Kingston?
About the podcast.
What does he say?
He asked, are you guys all right? Curly Nerd was very entertaining podcast week, but I worried for you guys. Perhaps there's something in the water. I think he thinks that we're kind of flying off the rails here.
Why was crazy on? Last week?
Apparently, we're going a little nuts.
What happened last week?
I don't remember what he.
I'm not know. Quite sure, but he also actually knows the family that owns Omar's Exotic Birds.
Oh, is that funny? Well, I thought Omar said that. Not Omar's Exotic Birds, but another Omar mentioned that last week we were particularly crazy too.
Yeah,
right. I don't know. We got to go re-listen to our podcast. What did we say?
I don't remember.
I don't remember. What was our last podcast?
If V was being cynical, he kept talking about rape and stuff.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it's because of you.
Yeah,
I don't give
you
a
crossed
shit.
Some type of stupid ass dude, line.
It happens.
So listen.
So who won the Super Bowl?
The Patriots in the most thrilling comeback in Super Bowl history. So I'm sitting there like
I couldn't watch it. I was too busy editing the video.
So I didn't watch it.
Yeah, you were too busy fucking casting spells on my demon spawn or something. I don't know. But so my 7-year-old nephew is a very sore loser, right?
Who's your 7-year-old nephew?
Cyrus.
Oh.
So he's a very...
It's a good name.
He's not your nephew. He's your cousin.
He's my cousin's kid. He's my nephew. But I call him my nephew. He calls me his uncle. Anyways, so
You're both wrong.
He was rooting for the Patriots. And I had to console him during the game because they were down by a lot. I'm like, look, Cyrus, it's okay. This is what happens in football. Sometimes a team you want to win doesn't win. You know, I'm being all nice to him and stuff. And then fucking Tom Brady scores a touchdown, right? And I'm like, look, Cyrus, don't get your hopes up. They still need a 2-point conversion. Then they need another touchdown and a 2-point conversion. There's not very much time left, blah, 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 right?
Mm.
They, lo and behold, they go and fucking do all this shit. And at the end of the game, I got a little 7-year-old dancing around like, ha-ha, neener, 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 I told you we'd win. Fuck you, blah, 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 blah.
Is he
blah,
a Patriot fan? Is his dad a Patriot fan?
No.
His
mom? There's a guy on the team named Danny Amendola. Mm-hmm. Who's this really short white guy who's one of their receivers. For whatever reason, he really likes this Danny Amendola guy. When he was playing Madden, his first team that he played with was the Patriots against my brother, and he kept throwing the ball to Danny Amendola, and he liked that
he's
guy.
He's seven?
He's seven.
So I don't know how to play that game.
So, yeah, he's pretty good, too. Like, he's not bad. So he likes the guy Danny Amendola. He doesn't like Tom Brady. He thinks Tom Brady's a cheater and he likes Trump, so he doesn't like him. He doesn't like Trump supporters.
You know, I've played Madden and stuff like that before, and it's I've probably considered that the most complicated game I've ever played.
It is super complicated.
But it's like you got to pick teams and then you got to pick like plays, and I'm like, I don't understand what this X is and where who's who and where they're going.
Yeah, the seven.
And then what's worse is you pick the play, but then I don't know like what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to just let like. Is this a battle strategy? They do their own thing, or do I move? Like no. I hate Madden. I hate. I tried it once. I'm never trying it again.
I've only played Madden once, and I didn't.
It's too complicated.
It's hard.
It's very complicated.
It's a 7-year-old's like excellent at it for a 7-year-old.
There's a study that was talking about how kids nowadays they put a book in front of kids.
Yeah, they try to swipe.
They couldn't figure out the book's pages get turned.
The other one, Mateen, he's 9. Bro, that kid has read every single Harry Potter. Yep. Front and back. As a 9-year-old, I'm very impressed because those are 1,000-page books. And
they're not 1,000-page books, but they're pretty big.
Yeah. Well, they're close to 1,000 pages, 700 pages.
The later books, yeah.
Yeah. So he's read all of them. And like he started reading them at age 7. Like,
yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. This kid loves reading. You know what he does on his spare time?
Reads.
Like he reads, and then he does like these little IT games on his computer.
What?
Yeah.
What are IT games?
There's games that like try to help you with like binary code and stuff.
What, is he going to become a computer designer?
No, his dream is to go to Harvard. So that's his dream school. He has his plan set to go to Harvard.
How old is he?
He's 9.
No kid at 9 should be thinking about Harvard.
He was thinking about Harvard at age 5.
It's elitist attitude
you call me elitist. Your fucking nephew's elitist.
And Harvard.
The younger one wants to...
What's the matter with Yale?
No, he wants to go to Harvard.
With Stanford.
So the younger one says, I will just go to Stanford because it's closer to mommy.
It's not that much closer.
It is closer than Harvard is.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you're on the same coast, yeah. But still.
So he said, Stanford's closer to mommy, and they have a better basketball team than Harvard, so I want to go there.
Why are they thinking of college at 9? What is wrong with these kids?
They're very smart kids.
No, that wanting to go to college is not the definition of smart.
They're saving. They have a college fund that
they save.
That's
a problem. That's a big problem for me. Like, kids need to be kids.
There are kids.
Like, I don't like the idea of kids having the pressure of thinking of college at that age.
That means they're selling out to the establishment early.
Yeah, he does soccer. He does basketball.
No, they need to make mud pies and shit.
Seriously. No, he does. But he does all the other stuff that kids do.
Has he made a mud pie?
No, not yet.
He's in a child.
A quintessential
part. It's kind of hard to make mud pies in California.
He's an elitist.
We just got right. Don't call my nephew an elitist. You fucking British piece of shit.
What is this British shit? Calling me British is not an insult. It happens to be a country, okay? That's like me throwing out, you Russian piece of shit.
Would be offensive to me.
How is it offensive?
I'm an Afghan. They try to take over our country.
You should. Fine, you Kazakhstani.
I would take offense to that too. I've seen Borat. I know what they do there.
Oh God!
They pimp out their sisters.
For the love of Christ!
I got my tour from Borat.
Jesus! All I could say is that if they're thinking of college at this age, there's a problem. My problem: if kids at this age are thinking of going to college, then we've entered into a twisted ass world and society.
All I know.
Which reminds me: have you been paying attention to what's going on in our twisted ass society right now?
That Nordstrom is very bad.
Yes,
for dropping Ivanka Trump's
life. It's been one of those weeks. Like, the problem of covering politics in the Trump era is that there's always something new.
Yeah, there's always a new story.
There's always something, like, you can't go a day without something stupid happening.
Yeah.
So in this past week, we've had Nordstrom's dropped Ivanka Trump.
Yep.
So Trump tweeted about Ivanka Trump.
Yeah, they're attacking his family.
They're attacking his family, and that's considered a violation of government ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Then Kellyanne Conway, his chief advisor,
spinster,
went on air and said, "You guys should go buy Ivanka Trump's stuff." So now the House Oversight Committee has referred her to the Government Ethics Board. So there's this whole spiel now: is our government ethics being violated? While that's going on, there's also this issue with the Muslim ban that's been in the courts for
Sean Spicer also made up a new terrorist.
He did. Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Yeah. When Melissa McCarthy's playing of Sean Spicer
was amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Considered to be one of the best and the most irksome. They got really annoyed by that.
Yeah. He tried to poo-poo it, or he tried to kind of laugh it off.
They mentioned that because he doesn't like weakness, uh-huh. The idea of a female playing Sean Spicer really pissed him off.
You know,
so they're talking about Rosie O'Donnell playing Steve Bannon.
Yeah. She changed her Twitter profile picture to Steve Bannon.
She did. Should be interesting. I wonder if they'd go that route.
I'd be dope.
You know, the funny thing is, like, what if the Trump administration collapses just because SNL's been messing with them?
Know.
Can you imagine that? Like, they just implode.
You know, it was the funniest tweet I've seen. The only thing Trump has made great again is SNL.
It's true.
SNL horrible up until now.
Yeah, but SNL has this tradition. Like, everyone keeps talking about SNL, but the reality is SNL hasn't been funny for ages.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, the funniest
it's been like
I've
20
been,
years.
Yeah, the funniest I've ever seen it was like. Really, like 80s and 90s.
Okay, well, yeah, Eddie Murphy era was hilarious.
Hilarious.
Yeah. The Will Ferrell era was good.
It had its hits and misses. I was not a Will Ferrell guy.
The Tina Fey and Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Fallon.
I think Tina Fey did pretty well.
Yeah, when she was playing Sarah Palin, that was pretty good.
But then they also had the late night stuff when Andy Samberg.
Yeah,
would do all that
I
stuff.
Never
it
found
wasn't
funny.
Bad, but like no. It was just kind of whatever.
Amy
great
Poehler
on
was great.
99 though.
I never
I like
found
him on that
particularly
show.
Funny.
Amy Poehler was great on it. Yeah. She played.
I was a more In Living Color guy.
She played Hillary. In Living Color wasn't.
It was in the 80s and 90s. But I like that comedy more.
So besides, you know, Melissa McCarthy and this SNL shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had this Muslim ban that's currently in the courts.
It's also something that we did on YouTube.
Yeah.
I dumbed it down. Check it out.
Dumbed it down. Check it out on YouTube. State of Washington sued, won, and then the government, the Department of Justice, went for an immediate appeal to the Ninth Circuit, to the Ninth Circuit courts. And the Ninth Circuit heard arguments this week, and they unanimously, all three of them, rejected the appeal.
3-0, bitches.
Yeah, and the their kind of their opinion that they gave out is pretty scathing. And the response from Donald Trump was,
"See you in court."
See you in court.
In caps lock.
In caps lock, which has now become a meme again. Yeah. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton tweeted out
3-0.
3-0. And it became the most popular tweet that's been sent out.
Oh, hey, Hillary's. There's a Hillary sighting.
Yeah, there's a 75,000 retweets.
Really?
It's the biggest retweets, and it's getting more than he is, so it must be irking him. Right. So all of that's going on, in addition to the fact that he's now signed an executive order creating new federal crimes, so that he's created a new set of crimes and increased the punishment for certain crimes, which is kind of the exact ass backwards that we should have been doing.
Right. Prison industrial complex.
He's also released the ICE agency, the immigration officers who are now raiding people's houses and deporting them. There was a woman that was deported this week. She was a mother of two American citizens. Had been living here for nearly 20 years.
I saw that. It was bad.
And
heart-wrenching.
It was very heart-wrenching. The picture of her son looking at her through the glass of the deportation van. So you had all these things going on. And it leads you to really kind of ask yourself, where have we arrived to in America? Right? I mean, like, it's only been, what? 3 weeks?
Yeah, almost a month.
3 weeks? It's not been a full month yet.
Yeah, almost a month.
3 weeks and it's like this much of a mess?
Yeah, dude, the fuck's going on?
Yeah, like he called Russia. Apparently he didn't know
what New Start was.
What New Start was.
He kept calling it Startup.
He just didn't get it. It's like we're in a weird position. Now, the good thing is the courts seem to be semi-functioning, but what happens? What happens when they goes to the Supreme Court? Oh, he did. He's calling the judges liberal and biased.
Political attack.
Political attack. Yeah, which you're not supposed to do, right?
The Ninth Circuit Court has a political agenda.
You're not supposed to attack the judiciary. It's meant to be independent completely. I'm always quite amused by Trumpkins who are like, the courts are threatening the Constitution. I'm like, you do realize that
they're upholding the Constitution.
Literally, their job is to uphold the Constitution. And if you've read the Constitution, there's this little thing called separation of power, checks and balances, hint, 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 right? It's like, how do you... They miss that part of it, but they're like, how dare they interfere with the president? That's so unconstitutional. It's like constitutional has become a catchphrase for anything they disagree with.
Yeah.
Right. Unconstitutional, right?
Yeah.
They don't actually know what's in the Constitution.
No.
Those liberal activist judges. I'm like, wait a minute. That's the judge's sole job is to uphold the Constitution.
Yeah.
Unlike the other two branches of government, right? Like, that's the only power, technically, that the Supreme Court and the courts have.
Yeah.
But what happens if the courts don't function? Like, the Supreme Court is 4-4 right now. If he puts in his judge, he can then repeal this, right? If it goes to the Supreme Court. If it doesn't, if it's a tie, then the lower court's decision is kept.
Uh-huh.
So what happens in a society when the government kind of collapses? You ultimately are in a semi-dystopian world.
We're in a post-Trump world. Post-Trump is dystopian now.
Yeah, we're not in a post-Trump world yet.
We're in a Trump world. Yeah, I'm saying post-Trump will be dystopian.
It's already dystopian.
Yeah, really.
Like, come full on. We're going to have our own fucking Hunger Games.
The funny thing about dystopian is that they kind of got replaced. So dystopian as a genre, it starts sort of a literary genre, then it becomes part of a movie genre, it's part of pop culture, comic books, TV shows, etc. Dystopian emerges out of this kind of moment in global history in which you're dealing with the rise of fascism.
Okay.
Right? You're dealing with government excess, right? Fascism is fundamentally about governments that are unchecked.
So this is like World War One, World War Two.
Yeah, post-World War One is when we really start to see dystopian writings, right? Okay. We used to start with Orwell's 1984, Aldous Huxley. A lot of these people were really thinking about what is going on with the state.
Okay.
Because the question of this dystopian world is society and the state.
So V for Vendetta would be dystopian?
Perfect example of dystopian, right?
Okay.
Eventually, the genre of dystopian kind of falls out of favor for another genre that overlaps with it. And that's post-apocalyptic.
So, like, because, like, one of my favorite movies of all time is Book of Eli, right? Like, I saw that with you, and that's dystopian, right?
Yeah.
But it's also post-apocalyptic, because didn't they, like, nuke the sun or something.
Yeah. So it's not dystopian in the literalist sense. Uh-huh. It may lead to a dystopian society should Gary Oldman's character eventually take over, right? Uh-huh. But it's post-apocalyptic. So if something happened where we stopped being able to envision what happens with the state.
Okay.
And that was in our big fear. And I think this is the post-nuclear age, right?
Yeah.
Is that we stopped fearing what would happen with too much government. And we start fearing what would happen when there was a nuclear war, when society was wiped out. And this is the rise of World War Z. This is the rise of Zombieland. This is the rise of Book of Eli.
So zombie movies would be considered post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, zombie movies are post-apocalyptic. They're a different type of post-apocalyptic. They're no longer fear of a nuclear holocaust. Like, for example, Book of Eli was probably some type of nuclear holocaust, right? Whereas zombie movies are post-apocalyptic in the sense of biological warfare.
Right? Gotcha.
Science gone awry. Uh-huh. Not necessarily technology, but like trying to come up with a cure or come up with a biological weapon.
Yeah. I Am Legend.
Is
like
unintentional.
Yeah. Yeah.
I Am Legend.
Like the Outbreak Monkey.
Like the Outbreak Monkey.
Yeah. Okay. Or the game Fallout.
Yeah. 28 Days Later. Shit like that. Well, those are good movies, man. I like zombie movies. I don't like zombie TV shows. Mm-hmm. Like, I could never get into like The Walking Dead for whatever reason. But zombie movies.
That's
like,
post-apocalyptic, right?
Yeah. Right. But like Zombieland. I Am Legend, things like that, Dawn of the Dead. Like, those movies I really enjoyed because it kind of, like, makes you think, like, what would you do in a society like that? I don't know about you two, but I wouldn't survive for shit.
I would survive.
I wouldn't.
I'd continue to live my life as it is.
Like, everyone keeps, like...
I'd still order DoorDash.
Like, no, like, all these
fucks... Persian restaurants survive somehow.
All these fucks who are like, well, I'm prepping for the zombie apocalypse. That's why I got me this AR-15.
Well, I've always said that, libertarians are basically fundamentally fetishizing the post-apocalyptic world.
They are. They love
it. Like, if you think about it, like that's what all libertarians want. All kind of like military personnel too, like post-military. Not all of them, but a good significant amount of them. Have you ever noticed that like zombie apocalypse is like a big thing about with military people?
Yeah.
That's because
maybe they know something we don't.
Or more likely, in that type of scenario, they know what their function and purpose is.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what they've prepared for. War zones are technically post-apocalyptic.
That's true.
If you want to see a post-apocalyptic world,
go to Iraq. Because
we fetishize it. But if you want to see it, go to Syria.
Yeah. Yeah, because then the rules of society no longer apply.
Yeah. Really? If you not just the we're rules of survive, society, yeah. Society doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's non-existent.
Ah. Right? If you want to see post-apocalyptic, this is my little spiel about the post-apocalyptic
fucking
world,
Marxist.
Right? It's like go to a war-torn society. Go to so like some people often talk to me about like, oh, I've done a tour here or there, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they do this and they do that. And I'm like, that's because they live in a post-apocalyptic world. Okay. You watch Walking Dead and you're like, oh, I can do that. I could be Daryl.
No, I can't.
Right?
Fuck that.
But I'm like, technically you can't. Because you've never actually lived. You've been an occupying force, a military, but you haven't actually lived in a world where everything collapses.
So you're saying if like there was a zombie outbreak, the people who would probably be the best at surviving would be the Syrians and the Iraqis and like
prove it. Like zombies, I've dealt with it. I dealt with Americans.
Yeah, Americans are like zombies. No, they shoot me.
Zombies? I've had a sod on my back for years. Zombie schmandies.
It's nothing, bro. I've learned to live off of like Russians.
Are you kidding me? After Daesh, zombies are break. It's like the people who've already lived in post-apocalyptic worlds are war-torn countries. Right, not just war-torn countries, but countries that have dealt with perpetual war.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense because I said it.
Fucking elitist piece of shit. Even with your fucking conversations, you have to be like, "Ooh, I said it, so it's gonna be perfect."
No, but you got to admit that was a good one. You hadn't thought of it.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it was a good way of looking.
See,
at
this is why I wouldn't survive. I wouldn't survive in Syria either, bro. Like I'm being real. Like if you put my ass in Syria right now, I'd be fucking dead. I'd be like, yo, Assad, come get me, bro. Because, like, I can't survive off this, like, two rations of bread
for a
week.
There's a friend of mine, and I love her. I'm not going to give her a shout-out because I don't want to embarrass her. But she said something so brilliant, right? We were talking about how lazy she was. She was being very honest about it. Because we were like, how far are you in your dissertation? She's like, I'm struggling. Uh-huh. And we all thought she meant she had a hard time Because writing a dissertation is a bit of madness. Forever, yeah. Yeah, it's madness.
It took Mustafa 17 years.
he didn't write a dissertation. He wrote an essay. Let me clarify for you that that was just an essay, not a dissertation. All right, a dissertation is roughly about 200 pages or so, right?
Holy sex on a hamster.
So we were talking about it, and she's like, oh, I'm having some difficulty. And I said, why is that? Is it because you've reached writer's block? She's like, no, Netflix.
What?
And I'm like, what do you mean Netflix? She's like, I just haven't started. I keep watching episode after episode. And this led to a similar conversation of like, what would we be doing if it was the end of the world? Uh-huh. And she said, I'm going to be 100% real with you. If the end of the world came about, I'm going to get my most expensive makeup. I'm going to get my most comfortable clothes. I'm going to order the best pizza possible, eat it. Then I'm going to get comfortable in my bed and will myself to die. So it's like she had decided in mm-hmm. her laziness
yeah.
that if the world ended, she wasn't even going to try.
Yeah.
She was going to go out on a full belly and be comfortable.
Yeah.
She's just going to lay in her bed
what
and
I
will
do.
Herself to die.
Here's what I would do. I would go to my grandmother's house, right? Eat some palau, and then take all the painkillers in that house.
There's a lot of painkillers.
All the painkillers and all the sleeping pills in that house. Take them all, fucking lay on the couch, shit myself to death. Just fucking pass out, shit myself while I'm passed out.
You
and really die.
Like you just want to die in your own filth?
Yeah, fuck it. So then no one can rape my body.
The reality is that if the world ended, I would continue.
Nah, fuck that shit, man.
I'd still be writing.
What is the point? I don't understand it. Like this dystopian shit, like Hunger Games shit happen. I ain't volunteering as tribute. I'm fucking gone. Like,
see, now that's an interesting point because Hunger Games is both.
It's both?
It's post-apocalyptic because what happened, right?
They went into war.
Yeah, there's a war, a massive war.
Yeah.
And especially if like you're in the districts. Have you ever noticed the districts look like war zones? Like,
yeah.
Like they've been stripped
bare. District 11 and shit.
Yeah. So there, it's post-apocalyptic,
uh-huh.
but it also happens to be
dystopian
because it's capital, right? It's fucked up. You have to volunteer as tribute.
I ain't volunteering as shit. I'd volunteer as, you could kill me now. I'd volunteer as tribute and then die immediately. Because... fuck it. Fuck my district.
See, now you're saying that now, right?
You're pretty cowardly.
I am, bro.
Yeah, the human need to survive, though.
Okay, V, I know that you've only known Diz for a few years. I'm just going to tell you that there is a deep-seated cowardice in him. I'm not disagreeing with him. That if the world ends, I'm pretty sure he's just going to let himself die.
Yeah, I'm being honest, man. Like, look, I'm brave when it comes to, like, fighting at the club and shit if I've had some drinks in me. But when it comes to, like, hey, look, bro, the world's ending.
You gotta give up toilet paper?
Yeah, I gotta give up toilet paper. Yeah.
He draws the line.
I draw the line.
He's like, I'm dead.
If I gotta shit in the woods, fuck it. I'm gone. Like, I wouldn't...
This is why I don't camp.
I wouldn't survive in, like, the 1700s and shit. I would have died of dysentery on the Oregon Trail, like,
I'm pretty sure you would have died of syphilis, to be honest with you.
That too.
Yeah.
I'd have been at all the brothels, getting all the STDs, and then I would have gotten dysentery and gotten syphilis and dysmedia and died.
What about you, V? Do you think you would have survived in a post-apocalyptic world?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, you think
I refuse to.
Would you also will yourself to die? You just talk shit about him, and now you're saying the exact same thing.
No, I'm just not that lucky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So in his case, he just gives up.
Here's the thing.
You've already assumed that you would, in the first blast, you're done.
No.
Yeah.
V would try to be an archer, accidentally have his arrow come back and hit him.
Yeah, but V's never been inclined towards archery.
I'm not.
He was a,
I like
he
to
was,
bash
he
was
a, yeah, he's an axe mace type guy.
Oh, you
That's
would.
That's true. D&D campaigns.
Yeah.
You would take your mace and you would... fucking follow through so hard that it would hit you in the leg and you'd get an infection and die off of that.
That's horrible. That's horrible. What is this? A D&D campaign by Alex?
Oh, yeah, seriously.
You rolled a one, motherfucker.
You rolled a one. It's like story of my life.
It's funny. Yeah, the doctor said that when I came out of the womb.
Oh, this kid rolled a one.
You swing at the zombie, completely whiff, somehow turn around and hit yourself in the back of the neck and die.
The sad reality is that both V and I have played Dungeons and Dragons, so rolling a one is actually very pertinent to our life. When you say roll a one, both of us go, oh, shit. Because we've all done it. We've all been there. Cast a spell, roll a one, blow up in your face.
I couldn't do it.
Son of a bitch.
That's true.
Is there like post-apocalyptic stuff in like comic books, but you have like X-Men who actually, the apocalypse actually comes through and you have
yeah, so X-Men depends. Has a future.
Like you look at any comic book really, the Marvel Universe usually focuses on things. If you look, Age of Apocalypse is an actual comic book series.
Okay.
Also, you look at anything like Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
And the stuff like Age of Ultron, right? Like House of M, right? These are all post-apocalyptic, not post-apocalyptic, they're all dystopian futures. Mm-hmm. Post-apocalyptic, because after apocalypse, yeah.
Days of Future Past is literally post-apocalyptic, right?
And this is what's crazy about these Marvel comics is that they tend to go towards the concept of dystopian future because the weapons, quote-unquote, the X-Men, the mutants or anything, have been wiped out. The weapons are destroyed society in one way or another, right?
Uh-huh.
Rather than going into Marvel, though, because everyone kind of knows the Marvel stuff, I'm actually going into more kind of the independent comic books that I think people should read, which are really interesting. One of my favorites right now, when we decided to go dystopian, the first thing that kind of popped in my head was this comic book called Transmetropolitan by Warren Ellis. Mm-hmm. What's great about this, it's about a journalist named Spider Jerusalem who lives on a mountain in the outskirts of town, right?
Hold on. His name was what?
Spider Jerusalem.
Spider Jerusalem.
That's a solid.
Two of the scariest things like imaginable.
It's a solid comic book name though.
Yeah, it is. Dope. It's a good name, right? And he's like a Hunter S. Thompson type character, right? Uh-huh. This like unequivocal truth journalist. He's a scumbag and he enjoys people's misery, but he has a lot of integrity when it comes to writing the news.
Ali.
And he ends up kind of it's really funny because the only reason why he comes back in society is because his publisher threatens him to take away his money because he promised to write a book. Mm-hmm. He took the money and he left.
I'm looking right at you.
I've never taken the money and left. I've always followed through with my writing obligations.
So Jerusalem comes back into town, right? And then it's him writing about the slums. And this is what I think is great about Transmetropolitan. It's really about what happens when capitalism runs amok. This is like when comfortability... when comfortability becomes kind of what creates dystopian futures, right? Okay. What happens here is it has a lot to do with politics too, right? In this modern society, everything is an ad, right? You can get anything you want, any drugs, everything has been commodified. So it's everyday occurrences. So child pornography, drugs, every single fetish, everything that you can possibly get, you can get at the mall, right? And then the thing is though, is also everyone's self-centered. It's all about this kind of that selfie culture. And this comic came out, 1997.
He fucking predicted 2017.
Jesus.
And what they did was, and this is what's crazy, it talks about, and he actually helps a politician named the Smiler. They call him the Smiler, Gary Callahan. He helps him get into power because he thinks he's the lesser of two evils, mm-hmm. right? Taking away from another politician named the Beast, the incumbent president. And what he finds out is that Callahan actually, he smiles in the camera, but he actually hates humanity, and the reason why he got into politics is he wants to destroy everybody. So it's Jerusalem trying to destroy and dismantle this politician who has become sick of society.
Holy shit.
Now, another really good one that I think is absolutely great is by my favorite author called Rick Remender. He does this one called Tokyo Ghost.
You've talked about this before.
Yeah, which is a really new one because it's a lot of heavy Trump influences.
Holy shit.
In this one. This one's also about kind of this dystopian runaway capitalistic idea, right? Where there is all sorts of media becomes a drug. So mm-hmm. everything is tailored towards your own personal purview, right? So you can get synthetic drugs, synthetic emotions, right? Synthetic first love, synthetic all this other stuff. And then you end up sitting in front of kind of your media thing and you just drone over all your shows, right? Yeah. So nothing happens, and then they connect you to machines that like connect to your genitals or whatever else, and then it's all basically no real contact.
Uh-huh.
And it's about this girl who is not connected in. So she has no technology, she has no nanobots in her system, right? What's crazy about this is her boyfriend is someone who is addicted to media, but he's also kind of a constable. He's like a law keeper, and he's given all these drugs to become stronger, more powerful, but he's also consistently plugged in, so he's always seeing ads and TVs and media and his favorite shows. He's in a constant state of kind of lethargy. The thing about Tokyo Ghost is they go to Japan where they had an EMP device, so there's no technology allowed there, and it's this president, this guy who's trying to take it over because they're running out of food. And what's crazy about this is that I'll actually give you some quotes here, which is really interesting from the book. The politician itself is actually completely modeled after Trump completely.
His name is Ronald Dump?
No.
Did they say they modeled it after Trump?
I'll give you some quotes and you can definitely see it, right? So this is actually the guy, right? He goes, Look, I didn't create the problem. Robotics do the farming, mining, manufacturing, construction, everything. Left an unemployed population with a lot of free time, so I keep them entertained. You drown them in idiocy or worse, echo chambers designed to reinforce their misinformed opinions. Right?
So fake news.
And this is a relatively modern interpretation, right? And this is where the Trump part comes in. This guy who kind of runs everything, he never wears pants, so his penis is just hanging out all the time, right? And it's just him just kind of like talking about how he created a media empire and how he's giving people what they want and how he's feeding them and how they're happy and about how classier his elite class is as opposed to these unwashed masses. There's a great part where he's actually talking to the news and talks about how he doesn't plan on abandoning people, and he just talks about how much he loves everyone. And then the guy who's interviewing him starts screaming about how beautiful and great he is and just starts blowing him. Right. Like, and that's like the big part of it, which is just crazy. It's him literally like blowing himself in a sense of the word. Right. And there's kind of an exposition between two just random characters. And they actually talk about this. This is what's interesting. So he goes, the election of 2044, Curls Bellberry, a boy band pop singer, won the presidency on the platform that the earth is flat and that he'd nuke New York to save Social Security.
B.O.B.
There's a good reason he was the last president. Problem with letting people pick a leader is that they gravitate towards confident sociopaths no matter how stupid they are. It's the perception of qualification that fools people. At least by having corporate executives rule us, we get folks who are good at business. Life hurts, the world is fucked, and that's not going to change. So what does Flack do? That's the guy. He gives them emo packs, total control over what they feel, immediate gratification. People want to feel good, be entertained, eat salty shit, and come twice a week. And provided they do that, they'll stay quiet.
I want to come more than twice
a week. No, that's interesting because the concept of the dystopian future has evolved over the years, right? So the original came out of a time period where the world saw the rise of fascism and totalitarianism.
Absolutely.
So it responded to it. Huxley, Orwell, they all wrote in the same. Huxley wrote in the 1930s.
A Brave New World.
Brave New World. Orwell, 1984, wrote in 1940s, if I'm not mistaken, right? So for them, they weren't just writing about a future.
Yeah.
They were writing a critique of present-day society. I mean, one of the things about dystopian societies is that, like sci-fi, they talk about the future, but the future is actually a critique of modern society.
Well, look at Hunger Games. It was written in 08, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it came out after like a post, right at the end of George W. Bush's presidency.
Right at the end of that.
You know, like
War of Terror.
And the thing is, a lot of people were claiming like if you were against the government, or if you critiqued Bush, you were like treasonous and like, you know, you should go to jail. And so what happens is she sees this, she makes this like fucking powerful like president who's like, if you're against me, then like, you know, it's an act of treason. So that's where you get the concept from.
But here's also in Hunger Games, is like, what is it that how does President Snow keep the population in line?
With the Hunger Games.
With the Hunger Games, right? And the capital eats it up.
Yeah.
Right? It's a big old entertainment thing.
Exactly.
And it's a death and gory and ugly, but people can't turn away, right?
Yeah.
And there's drama. They're told they need to act and fall in love and wear dresses and whatnot, right? This is fundamentally the difference between Huxley and 1984.
Okay.
So dystopian societies always deal with totalitarian governments in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
They're either technological or they're religious, as in the case of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, which, by the way, is being made into a movie.
Atwood wrote something else, too.
She wrote a bunch of stuff, but her famous one is A Handmaid's Tale,
okay.
Which I wrote as a college paper when I was in high school for a person who was in college. Right,
I write college papers in high school. I'm Ali Olumwe.
This was my gig was I would the people who were at college.
Oh, you wrote someone else's college?
I wrote someone else's. They
you
used to.
You little deviant scumbag.
And I had one rule that they had to turn the paper back to me so I know what a grade I got.
So you have to make sure you got an A.
I had to keep the paper. Right?
Yeah, to know that you got an A.
Just to know that I got an A. I got an A on every single one of the papers I did. Oh. I only did like five.
How much did you charge them?
I charge them a bit.
How much?
When you're smart, you have the right to charge. I'm not going to talk about it.
150, 200?
But it was a good gig when you were in high school.
Can I have been your manager? Take 10%?
If you were smart, you would have.
You didn't tell me this.
I can't do it anymore because I'm in the system now, right? It's like when you write publicly, you're in the system, so people can't plagiarize you. Mm. Right. So it doesn't work anymore. But this was back before I was a published writer.
Where the fuck were you before I dropped out of college?
So I wrote about Handmaid's Tale, and Handmaid's Tale, it's religion, uh-huh. right? So the Handmaid's Tale, there's everyone, it comes from the story of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar. Abraham Hagar? In the Bible can't have a child with Sarah, uh-huh. so he sleeps with her handmaiden, Hagar or Hajar, uh-huh. and they have a child. It's the story of Isaac and Ishmael, right?
Is this why you're supposed to kill the children?
In the Handmaid's Tale, they have sex with a designated person who is bred to be basically a mom.
Oh.
They're called handmaids. They open up the Bible and they read and then they have sex. Like there's a whole religious Puritan element to Handmaid's Tale. In other dystopian, it's the state itself, the totalitarian state.
84.
But there's two types of states.
Okay.
And this is very important, right? So 1984 is Big Brother.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. It goes directly to what V was talking about in some
CCTV.
Ways. It talks about the cult of personality because the leader, the party leader, is a cult of personality in 1984, right? Uh-huh. And it's about thought control, not just about, we rule everything, but you're not allowed to think negative thoughts.
Yeah.
You need to keep a population under your control. Therefore, you control even their thoughts.
Yeah.
And you do so by various restrictions and regulations. So in 1984, what did they do? They burned books,
mm-hmm.
right?
They did in Fahrenheit 451,
They
too.
Did. But the point is that the books are threatening because they have subversive ideas,
mm-hmm.
right? In Brave New World, also tied to Tokyo Ghost. Ghost Tokyo? What was it called?
Tokyo Ghost.
Tokyo Ghost. It's not a state that controls you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state that distracts you. Because what's in Brave New World?
Soma.
Soma. The drug Soma.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not... You have two cases of uh-huh. the totalitarian state. One which burns books and one which doesn't have to burn books.
It just makes you stupid.
Right? And that's a very dangerous one. That particular note of the totalitarian state is known as the distraction state.
So that's Hunger Games.
It's time to Hunger Games.
Okay.
Right? So Tokyo Ghost brings in both of those. Hunger Games brings out the distraction state. This came out of a critique that was in the 1930s and 40s. I've mentioned them before, Theodore Adorno and Horkheimer.
Yeah,
this is
know these
people's
as, these names
are known
now.
As the Frankfurt School of Thought. Uh-huh. And it was a critique of capitalism and totalitarianism in the state. And they argue that totalitarianism in Europe came in the form of the state having complete and total control.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? And that would be 1984.
Okay.
When they came to America, Adorno actually came to Orange County.
Right,
he hated it. He escaped Nazi Germany, and he came to Orange County, and he fucking hated it. He's like, this place is worse.
What?
He hated it because for him, what he saw was American corporatism.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said American corporatism is also totalitarian, but it's a different type of totalitarian.
Because Orange County is different. So Orange County is different than like other like suburbs of like big cities. Because Orange County.
It's very different.
It's not a suburb, right?
It isn't.
I try to like explain to people like what Orange County is.
It's a suburb without a major city.
Yeah. I'm like, they're like.
Because suburbs came out of Eisenhower era, right?
Yeah, urban sprawl.
You had the cities and then he created the suburbs for returning soldiers, for all sorts of people where they could live.
Like, I grew up in a suburb. I grew up in Springfield, Virginia, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C.
Yes, yes.
Washington, D.C. is the main hub. Most people had
people
jobs
work
in
D.C.,
right? Orange County is not like that.
I mean, we technically, a lot of people work in L.A., but we're not the
not
suburb
really.
Of L.A.
No, because then you have...
L.A.
You have,
has their own suburbs.
Yeah, they have like, Redondo Beach and like Torrance and shit like that. But you, because it's called the South Bay for L.A., but we're not a suburb. We're not a suburb of Long Beach
we're
either.
We're an entirely different thing. And that's what Adorno freaked out about, is that the suburb is a way by which empires are able to control populations,
uh-huh.
right? Cities are dangerous by nature. Cities are very dangerous because people organize, they mobilize. Mm-hmm. There's things that are going underground. Cities actually end up becoming really important safe spaces for LGBTQ, for minorities, for any form of resistance you're able to create. For example, during the restriction and violence committed against gay people in the early 20th century, the safest places were actually cities where they wouldn't get together in each other's private houses. They would actually go to a specific restaurants that would have curtained off places that could, so the public sphere itself, the attempt to control the public sphere would also be the place where people could resist.
Yeah.
This is in a great book by a guy named Chaucer called Gay New York. Read it. Really, really, really good.
Well, here's the thing.
That's why LA is interesting. suburbs are completely different. They don't have the capacity to do that.
So that's what I said last week when I was saying, like, I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but I mentioned it, is saying being back in Orange County, like, I didn't enjoy being back here because I wasn't close enough. Like, we had the Women's March here, right, in Santa Ana. It was very small.
It was big, though. I was surprised by how big it was.
Yeah, but it's still relatively small compared to other places, right?
Compared to, but it was bigger than I expected.
Has there ever been a Black Lives Matter, like, protest here?
And the reason, because it's a suburb.
Right? But it's not a suburb.
Designed like a suburb.
Yeah, which is weird. So, which is, like, I was talking to Omar and Noor about this. Mm-hmm. I hate being in Orange County because I don't have the chance to be as outspoken here as I did in that one weekend in D.C., If I lived in Springfield, right? Like, let's say, like, I never moved here and I stayed in Springfield and all this was going on, I'm one metro, like, bus ride or train ride away from the city.
Well, the OC is the perfect example of American corporatism that Adorno was talking about, right? It's meant to be distract, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And you regulate. OC is basically a center of just, you go out and shop, you go out and eat, and then you come back home.
Yeah, everything's closed at, like, 10 p.m. Yeah.
It's all about the regulation of movement and specifically the regulation of people, mm-hmm. right? So Adorno argued, as much as he hated Orange County, Orange County was the center of his argument. The center of his argument was that there was this thing called culture industry, that capitalism in the state mm-hmm. no longer controlled you through juridico institutions, that is the law, right? Okay. There's another theory called by Althusser, which argues that the state controls you two ways.
What now?
Althusser, right?
Arab dude?
No, he's not Arab in any way, shape, or form, but a famous post-Marxist. He says the state has two weapons in its hand. Uh-huh. One is the coercive apparatus.
Police.
That would be the police and the military. Exactly, right? Literal physical force. Mm-hmm. A perfect example, Black Lives Matter, who shows up? Riot police.
Military.
Militarized riot police. That's coerced. That's the coercive apparatus.
Yeah, they didn't
you
have that.
You step out of the line, we crush you.
Yeah, they didn't have that shit.
They have
march.
A second apparatus, though, that is more subtle. It's called the ideological apparatus. That would be media, culture,
yeah,
right.
That's we can't imagine our life not being right. capitalistic,
exactly,
or whatever else. Like no. we simply just can't imagine.
Yeah. And Foucault,
society be different.
Foucault takes this even further by envisioning what he calls the panoptic state. Right,
panoptic.
The panoptic is a type of prison that's designed. It's like there's a central tower,
uh-huh.
and the prisons are in a circle around it. The guard is only at the top.
Uh-huh.
There's one guard, but the window is black, so you don't know if the guard is there or not.
Uh-huh.
But the idea is that the guard is all-seeing eye, like a Sauron,
okay.
able to see everyone at all times. But you have no idea if the guard is in there or not.
Uh-huh.
The mere thought of the gaze of the guard controls your behavior.
It's like the security cameras, that like little half-sphere.
Exactly. Or yeah. think of it this way. Why do you stop at a red light when there's no cops around? That's the panoptic gaze.
It's conditioned.
It's conditioned, right? So that's the idea, right? That the state has these methods of control. For Adorno, the culture industry in particular was big. And that is industry that was based off of producing fake culture. Reality TV, stars, right? How did we go from celebrities being poet laureates and writers to being movie stars?
That's your spiel.
That is a very interesting spiel, right? In the early 1900s, right? Being an actor was actually a bad thing.
Yeah.
Being an actor was considered the lowest rung of society.
Yeah, because you were just a fucking jester, basically.
You were not just a jester. You were likely connected to prostitutes. Prostitutes.
What'd you say?
Communists.
Well, later on. Yeah. But the lowest rung of society was prostitutes and actors.
Oh, shit.
Right? It was the worst. Today, actors are some of the most, are our celebrities.
Huge.
How did that happen? Adorno says it's the culture industry, right?
Uh-huh.
Perfect case and example of this is Hunger Games and Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump is a reality TV president.
Correct.
His success is based off of not the need to burn books, but a society that doesn't need to burn books. Yeah. You don't need the media to tell you the truth or not because you don't believe it and you don't care.
It's rigged, motherfucker. Right?
That's a different type of dystopian society that I think is more terrifying than 1984's dystopian society. Because that totalitarianism of that type can be resisted.
Yeah.
There's a single force, you just need to take it out.
It's actually, I mean, it's the basis of what, of Americana, like when we consider a point of pride in America, us in World War II, us fighting the Nazis is considered like a big point of our own cultural identity.
Yeah.
But then we're not going to, you know, but we don't identify the fact that, you know, having a show where you follow rich people around eating at restaurants is part of our culture, but it is just as much part of our culture as that is. Also, I mean, if you look in our past, you're talking about about dystopian futures that had to do with like the World War II, the Korean War, etc. Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, perfect example.
A lot of his are actually
a lot dystopian. Of his stuff. You can tell he's been deeply affected by current political or like things that are going on in the politics at the time. It's just a quick rundown of some episodes that you want to check out when you want to look at dystopian. Eye of the Beholder, real famous one. It's a Good Life, which is the one where the kid, if you think negative thoughts, he sends you to the cornfield, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like a Lee when he was 9 years old. The Old Man in the Cave is an interesting one about technology. And then number 12, Looks Just Like You, is also a really great one. The Obsolete Man, hands down my favorite one. It's got Burgess Meredith in it, and it's about
Penguin,
a dystopian future where he's a librarian. He's considered obsolete by the state. Right. And then I just wanted to give you a real quick quote from Rod Serling in that show. And this is, I think it's really important. He goes, this is like when the episode starts. He goes, "You walk into the room with your own, at your own risk, because it leads to the future, not a future that will be but one that might be. This is not just a new world. It's a simple extension of the one of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted a ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinement, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of those superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy, and truth is a menace."
And this is actually, Sterling is actually quoting someone who's quite famous. It's called Hannah Arendt. She wrote a book called The Origins of Totalitarianism, right? She was fascinated by Nazism and even wrote the book, The Trial of Eichmann, I believe it is.
Adolf Eichmann?
Yeah, Adolf Eichmann. Mm-hmm. Really, really good book. And the notion of the banality of evil, mm-hmm. right?
The what now of evil?
Banality of evil.
What does that mean?
That like evil is ordinary, right? Yeah. Like evil is committed not by supervillains, by ordinary people.
Okay. Yeah.
Bureaucrats.
That comes from Hannah Arendt and with Zygmunt Bauman, right, who died last month.
You mentioned that.
In fact, if anyone wants to understand that banality of evil, look at what's been going on with the custom borders, with the custom patrol, right? Borders and customs patrol. They have been using the executive order, even though it's not to be enforced, there's been a stay. Mm-hmm. They've been using it to do really atrocious thing. And there's a great article that's written by the New York Times that talks about how ordinary police officers, ordinary people, are committing atrocities in Trump's name. The hijabi Olympian, fencing Olympian, she's an American citizen.
Yeah, Ibtihaj Muhammad.
Detained for 3 hours the other day.
What?
Canadian individual of Moroccan descent. She's of Moroccan descent.
Wasn't allowed to go to Vermont.
But she's a Canadian citizen. It's not one of the seven countries, but she was denied access. So even if they're not part of the seven countries, these ordinary people have been doing horrific things, and that's the banality of evil. But Sterling's quote actually comes from something that Hannah Arendt said, and this is very important. "The ideal subject of totalitarian rule is not the convinced Nazi or the dedicated communist, but people for whom the distinction between fact and fiction, true and false, no longer exists." And that's the big difference between the totalitarian state of George Orwell, which controls truth. There's a ministry of truth, remember? In Orwell's 1984, there's a ministry of truth that puts out propaganda.
Yeah.
In the distracted state, the Aldous Huxleys, where you're on Soma or reality TV or whatnot, truth no longer exists, right? There is no difference between them. Donald Trump is doing all sorts of symbolic things. He's claiming things that are factually not true.
Yeah, he said the murder rate's the highest ever been in 47 years.
The Yemeni raid that ended up with the death of a Navy SEAL, the death of an 8-year-old American girl, was a botched, complete, horrific raid, was a total success, right? And that's the key of totalitarianism in the distracted version of totalitarianism. There's another great Twilight Zone episode, which I'm surprised you didn't mention, because it's probably the most famous, is The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, right? Which is a little mini version of a dystopian society, right? Or a post-apocalyptic society. In it, what happens is the lights are cut out on Maple Street, the small street, and then the lights start to intermittently go off at people's houses, and the citizens start to accuse one another. And before long, chaos reigns. And then you later find out that it's an alien experiment, right? They come down to experiment on humans with this very little thing of cutting out the lights and seeing what happens, right? This is the kind of...
They cut out the lights, Diz kills himself.
This is the kind of fascinating stuff that literature and TV and movies does. Pop culture or culture isn't just a tool of the state, right? As Adorno argues, it's also the area that critiques the state. Twilight Zone, 1984, Brave New World, Handmaid's Tale, Hunger Games. All of these are ways of critiquing the state. Now, you can also argue, though, people watched Hunger Games. They loved it. It's a great story. But did they walk away going, we need to watch the state? No. We need to critique the state.
Not at all.
Oh, shit. They're right. We're all very amped about
the Kardashians. They did that in V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta is another example. Well, the V for Vendetta is an example of 1984-style totalitarianism.
Yeah.
Right? It's a classic version of totalitarianism.
R.I.P. John Hurt.
Yeah. And this, by not understanding the difference between the two of them, not understanding the difference between V for Vendetta and Brave New World or Hunger Games, right?
Uh-huh.
We have now think that totalitarianism can happen in America. There's actually a book called It Cannot Happen Here, right? And it's been proven false now with the election of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Right, because we think of totalitarianism as Nazism, we don't understand that there are other versions of it. We go, it can't happen here. He can't possibly be a Nazi.
Can.
It's not happening here. We're not a totalitarian state because we don't recognize the distracted state. The state that doesn't go around burning books.
Mm-hmm.
But the state that you sit there and go, that book is fake. That expert is a liar. The news is fake. But I want to suck the dick of, what was his name?
Mr. Flack.
And that's from Tokyo Ghost. All right, let's end it here. This was an interesting podcast. I think I enjoyed talking about dystopian versus post-apocalyptic.
One of my favorites.
Because there is a big shift, right? I want to talk a little bit more about the history of why suddenly we go from talking about totalitarian states to talking about the end of the world, right? Why that happened culturally and what does that mean? And why there may be return to dystopian stories with Donald Trump.
We'll get to number two.
Yeah, we'll do a... number two podcast on this. Let us know if you liked it and what your thoughts are, what your favorite dystopian story is. Is it Brave New World, Handmaid's Tale, Hunger Game, or one of the classics by Ursula K. Le Guin, The Ones Who Walk Away from the Omilas? I'll talk about that next time, which is actually really, really kind of cool. It's a short story by Ursula K. Le Guin. Let us know what your favorites are. Did you like it? Did you not? And do you agree or disagree with us? And Diz is going to let you know how you can do that.
Yep. Facebook.com/currentlynerdy. We're on Twitter @currentlynerdy on Twitter. Instagram @currentlynerdy on there as well. Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. YouTube, we just put out a new video. Diz dumbs down the news, the Muslim ban. So YouTube, just search Currently Nerdy. You'll find us on there. And we're on iTunes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you haven't given us a rating yet, please do. We need more ratings. I would highly appreciate it. If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, let them know how they can get a hold of you.
Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can also find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at AAOLOMI. I'm actually really enjoying both Instagram and Twitter right now. If you want to follow my thoughts, that's definitely on Twitter. If you want to follow what I'm doing as an academic and books I'm reading, quotes that are coming up in my research, follow me on Instagram. You can also find me on my website, aliolomi.com, A-L-I-O-L-O-M-I, where I recently posted the link to an article I published about the Muslim ban, published at Religion Dispatches. Go check that out. Diz, how about you?
You can find me Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all that good stuff. Dizbulla, D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you. Please don't try to control us with your reality TV because I'll probably fall for it.